Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Fireside Chat. We figured out, right before I came on, as it were, how rarely I have a guest at the Fireside Chat, because I really do like to reserve it for you and me. So, if I choose a guest, it's a serious statement about the individual. So let me give you a very long introduction. Because you need the backstory about how this came about. A couple of months ago, I was invited. Actually, I was invited a year ago, but I lived the invitation to go to Denmark and to speak in its parliament building. I didn't speak to the parliament, but I spoke in the parliament building for the Free Speech Society of Denmark, which gave me a free speech award. I normally don't take awards, but I really wanted to go to Denmark and to help out this group. There aren't that many free speech groups anywhere in the world, including Europe. Thank God we have that in the United States, but not sufficiently, but that's another matter. Anyway, I gave the talk and I was interviewed by a number of people on the conservative side of the Danish journalistic world. And one of those who interviewed me is the young woman that I am inviting here. We invited her. She's never been to America. This is literally her second day in the United States, well, technically first day. And my wife and I are just beyond delighted. So I have to tell you a little about my reactions to people. This is a very interesting subject, and you may want to comment on this afterwards. So I have a very dear friend since high school, and when we would meet a new person, he would often comment on the person's intelligence. Because he zoned in on how bright a person was. And I remember thinking, and I'm talking about late teens, early 20s, and I remember thinking, I don't really care how bright a person is. And I have even theories on that, because most people are bright enough. But I did zone in on their goodness. I was able to tell, and this is a gift, I don't take any credit for it, I have almost never been hurt, because I have been given this gift of knowing a person's character. Not everybody's. I mean, there are a lot of people I meet and I don't make any assessment. Anyway, this was a combination, meeting this person in Denmark, of brains and goodness. And I think we turned out right. So she is a journalist. She is a conservative. Any conservative in Europe is a collector's item. We said, we'd love to have you at our home. And then it occurred to me, we're going to do a special Fireside Chat with Astrid, A-S-T-R-I-D. And now comes the fun part. Because Danish is not an easily pronounced language. Your last name is H-O with a line through the O-G. Mm-hmm. And now the fun part. You will hear her name as it should be pronounced in Danish.
Okay. My name is Astrid Hø.
Did you get that?
How do you pronounce it, Dennis?
Astrid Hø. Was I even close?
I think you are better on the last name now. Yeah, the first
lacking.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting. I had Bjorn Lomborg, the great independent voice on the environment, on my show. He's Danish. And I remember years ago, I think it was his birthday, and I said, how do you say happy birthday in Danish? Say happy birthday in Danish.
Tillykke med fødselsdagen.
And I realized when he said it, I wouldn't repeat it accurately. I love languages and I love music and they're related. And I learned Russian and French and Hebrew. I studied Arabic and can get along in Spanish, but Danish has a world of pronunciation that's unique to itself. Is that right?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
Because you don't really pronounce all the letters.
Exactly. So, in, for instance, my last name, we don't pronounce the G. And we also have
not
many...
Not like it's a long name. Yeah. H-O-G, but we don't pronounce the G.
Yeah.
So, slowly, I love this. Slowly, how do you pronounce your last name?
Who?
Who?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So every non-Dane would say Hulk, right?
Yeah, Hulk or something like that, yeah.
So you're used to that?
Yeah,
okay.
I am.
And Astrid is pronounced in Danish?
Astrid. Yeah.
So is the D pronounced?
Yeah, it's a soft D, but it's hardly hearable, but it is, you can hear it like Astrid. Yeah.
Well... All right, but I'll call you Astrid,
it's fine.
Out.
Yeah.
So, tell everybody the circumstance under which we met.
All right. So, I'm a journalist for a media called Contrast in English, and it's a center-right media conservative, I would say. And actually, my editor in chief was supposed to interview you, but he fell sick. And I didn't actually know you beforehand. Sorry, Dennis. But
well, let's put it this way. Thank God enough people there did for me to get the invitation,
exactly.
If nothing else than to meet you.
Yeah, so I quickly did my studies upon you, and then I did the interview. And I think we just hit it off immediately, pretty
Correct.
Much.
Yes.
And we both have, I think, the same intuitive understanding of people. I would say too. So we liked each other. And then you said you should come and see me accept this award the next morning.
Oh, you didn't even know that?
No.
Oh.
I knew you were accepting it, but I had no plans of
coming.
No, I didn't know about it beforehand. So, but you said I should come and see you give the speech and all that. And of course, I would like to. So I came. And then when you saw me, you had a lot of fans standing around you, and you said, "There she is. I want you to stay in my life."
And that sounds like me.
Yeah. And then...
oh, God.
And then the other thing that happened that day was that you were supposed to have a dinner with the Free Press Society, and someone couldn't make it. I can't remember who it was.
Oh, it's the Free Press. I said free speech. Free Press.
And then I was so lucky to be invited in his stead. And then we talked.
So wait, we met through two sicknesses.
Yeah. Yes. So I'm the eternal stand-in, apparently. But two very lucky coincidences.
And it all worked out.
Yeah.
So let's get to know you a little better and then talk about Europe and everything. And you're as open as I am, it's obvious. So this is something I'm very, very happy about. So at what age would you have called yourself conservative? Again, you're 30.
Yeah, I'm 30 now. I would say in the beginning of my 20s, I realized it. I was studying Danish literature at the university, and I found a Danish thinker and a priest called Søren Krarup. And I wrote his, I read his memoirs, and I realized, I thought, and I understood the world like he understood it. It's to be conservative is a way to view the world, I would say. So that's why, that's when I would put that word. Before that, I thought I was a libertarian. And I became politically aware when I was 12 or something. Yeah.
Were you influenced by someone, or it's just came from your own nature?
I believe it's a combination. So I believe I was born conservative in the way that when I was just very young, I had a very clear, I had a very strong sense of justice. For instance, I thought in Danish schools, they do a lot of group work. And we are taught that the strong pupils should lift up the weak pupils, and then they do the project together and share the honors. And I thought that was unjust. And I really like to help other people, but sharing the result and not saying who did what, I just felt it was completely, it was not right. And I feel that is a conservative sentiment.
That is perfect. That is just perfect.
Yeah.
Forgive me, but I have to react. What you realized, though you wouldn't have put the words, you believed in justice, not social justice.
Yeah, exactly. Like equality of opportunity and not equality of outcome. And that is just from when I was very young. And another thing is that I've always really appreciated order, and I've appreciated hierarchies. Like I always respected the teacher, and I always respected like the police, and I always respected people who knew a lot. I always respected knowledge, and that was from an extremely young age. So I feel in that way I was born conservative.
That's right.
But of course there were also
some. But you were not only born it, but this I need to tell you, you can articulate it. See, a lot of people have the instinct, but you can articulate your instinct. I respected hierarchies. You know how few people would say that? So again, I will just tell you, I've done a lot of work on the Ten Commandments. My massive writing and lecturing on it. So I'm often asked, what do you think the most important of the Ten Commandments is? And I've given different answers in different times in my life. My answer now is honor your father and mother, because of that, it establishes hierarchy.
Yeah.
And it's the fifth commandment. The first four rely on the fifth, and the second four rely on the 10th, which I don't want to get into that in detail, but the vehicle to the hierarchy of God is the hierarchy of the parent.
Yeah, I believe that's true because it's a model of the universe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did your parents know you were conservative? Did you articulate this at home?
Well, I think that, so my parents were, at that time, I think, center right. And my mom is a high school teacher, and she never believed in group work either. So, I mean, in that way, I think she just figured out, of course, I wouldn't be to the left. But I was actually the one who started to study conservative thinking. And then I led my mom to realize she was a conservative as well. But they have been like center-right, both of them. Yeah.
So you're very open, which is very important, in my opinion, for all of us who talk to people. Your dad died when you were 14.
Yeah.
Of cancer.
Yes, after a few years of sickness.
Do you remember him healthy?
Yes, but not very well, I'm afraid.
Not very well.
Yeah.
How did his death affect you?
I guess it's yet to be determined, but I think that the main problem I have is that I need half of the puzzle to understand who I am. And I really need, there's a lot of myself I don't understand because I have my mom to reflect part of me, but I don't have my dad. And whenever I'm doubtful of which way to turn, then I wish I would have his advice as well. And I wish that I would know more about, for instance, everyone tells me that he was very funny and very sociable. And I just wish I could remember that myself because I think I'm like him that way, but who knows? Mm-hmm. And then another thing is that whenever, for instance, if I have a boyfriend, I meet him, I really feel there's a part of me I can't show him because I can't show him my dad. And I always wonder what my father would think of any man I'm in love with. It's almost like I'm I'm almost a bit embarrassed that there's part of me I can't even explain to people I meet, because there's just a part of me that's just covered in darkness, I feel.
That's an interesting way to look at it. I had both my parents till my 50s, till I think older, even maybe late 50s. But I don't know if you need that parent to understand yourself. My suspicion of you, and I may be 100% wrong, I think you understand you pretty well. I think you're very self-reflective, that you would admit. I think you think that because he left your life at such an early age. But there are many people who had bad relations with a parent. And
they are probably affected worse.
Oh, there's no comparison.
Yeah.
No. To have had a parent that you loved or admired or both who died early is infinitely better than a parent you don't love or admire for many years.
Yeah.
George Gilder noted that. George Gilder is one of the greatest living American thinkers. I read him when I was in college, and he's still living. And I interviewed him once. He's done some PragerU videos, by the way. And he lost his father when he was a child. His father was shot over Germany. His father was in a bomber for the U.S. Air Force. So he really didn't know him almost at all. But there was a picture of his father on the fireplace, and they told him stories about his dad. And he said to me, and I'm paraphrasing it, I don't remember the exact words, I had a father. He died, but I had a father.
Yeah.
So that's what makes me think of that.
Yeah.
You had a father.
Yeah, and that's obviously very, very important. I think, going from your first question, I think that another way it affected me, of course, was having him fell sick at a very early age. It makes you grow up very fast, because it is when you are a child, you don't realize if you have a good childhood, you feel protected and you feel nothing can harm you. And you're not even aware that this is how you feel, because you have your parents and they are just two rocks in your life. And then when my dad fell sick, of course, I just knew he had to live, because like what else? Like, why shouldn't he live? And then at the end, he didn't, after many struggles. And I watched him like slowly perish. And to have that, it was like having I lost like the ground underneath my feet. And ever since then, I didn't feel secure. Mm-hmm. And I feel that's still one of the problems I struggle with, that always have this sense, even when things are going well, that it could change at any minute, like disaster could strike and everything could be different. And I've felt that way ever since.
Well, so interesting that you should say that. I had both my parents, and I have always felt disaster can strike at any moment.
Okay.
Because you are a realist and I am a realist.
Maybe.
I wish everybody knew disaster could strike at any moment.
Mm.
It doesn't necessarily make you insecure.
Mm.
It makes you appreciative.
Yeah.
Well, it hasn't struck today.
Yeah, I agree. I think it makes me appreciate the people in my life more.
Yeah, and your life generally.
Yeah.
Yes, it comes out of you.
Yeah.
A sense of delight at good things are.
Yeah, it's true. I really appreciate life. So in that way, yeah. And maybe I would have turned out that way anyway, but I don't know.
No, right. Well, first of all, thank you for your openness. So I assume that you came from a more secular home, because every European home almost, not all, but almost every is secular. Is that correct?
That is correct. my dad, he did believe in God, but he kept it private. And I think one of the reasons he did that was because my mom was very secular. And so we only went to church when it was Christmas and, I don't know, someone had to get baptized or, yeah. So it wasn't really a part of my childhood.
So if I would have asked you at 12, do you believe in God, you would have said?
I would probably have said, I'm agnostic at that age. I'd probably just learned that word. I would probably say,
did your father's death affect your belief?
It did.
Make you less likely to believe?
It made me more likely.
Really?
Yeah, I would say because you feel the need to believe then, of course.
Otherwise, life is chaos.
I wouldn't say it's necessarily chaos, for me at least. But I just felt very strongly that I wanted there to be something more, of course. And also he believed it very strongly at the end. And so of course I wish for it, and I still do.
And how are you today religiously?
Religiously, I won't use the term agnostic. I don't like it. I would say that I'm hoping to believe. And I think it could happen because I do feel I have religiousness in me. But it's just the thing when your brain can only think logically and that's the only thing you've learned, then being an adult and thinking in a different way, it takes time. It's like a muscle that's never been used.
Well, it hasn't been used. This is, to me, a tragedy. Anyway, you know my approach is through the brain.
Yeah.
That's why I call my book The Rational Bible.
Yeah. And I've started reading Genesis, and it's very good.
Well, you're the perfect person to read it, because it appeals to the mind.
Yeah.
I don't understand there is no solid intellectual alternative to what we call the Judeo-Christian worldview. There are alternatives, but they're not solidly intellectual. That everything is a matter of opinion, good and evil, that everything is mechanistic. There's no mind. It's just a series of neurons that are firing. I mean, these are not intellectually sustainable positions, but anyway, I hope it does touch you because we need you, as it were. Why do you think Europe is so secular? It was the home of Christianity.
Yeah.
What happened?
So I believe it in a way. It was Protestantism that triumphed itself to death, because Protestantism is very inverted. It's all about a sincere relationship between you and your God. And so Luther said, you have to pray alone in your room. So, and I think once you take the social aspect out of faith, like, for instance, if it's important to go to church to show that you're religious, then you lose a lot of the incentive for the average person to show that Christianity and then to remember that Christianity. So I think what happened is it became so private that people forgot about it after the generations.
That's a very intelligent take.
I don't think it's originally mine.
Yours or not, it's an intelligent take. The obvious challenge is that Catholicism is also dying in Europe.
It is. But you could argue that it's dying at a slower pace. So, for instance, the Catholic part of France is still much more religious today than
that's fair.
Yeah. So you would say there's more to hold them back. And then of course you have all the more people study at university and all that, the more secular they become. Of course,
that's true all over the
so
Western
there are different
world.
Things at play. I would say.
So I'm going to bounce a theory off you. So I'm a Jew, as you know, and I very, very much worry about the death of Christianity, because if Christianity dies, we're not going to get beauty. Mm. We're just going to get secular chaos, yeah, which is exactly what we have. Men give birth to secular chaos. Okay, you know, and I could give 20 examples of the absurd that people have come to believe. So, but I have another thought, and I'd like you to react, even okay, though it may be the first time you have heard this. There were two huge sources, in my opinion, in it, your Luther notion and the it Protestantism sort of committed suicide. Mm. By getting so inward, mm, is a fascinating idea. But I'd like to offer you two external, yes, ideas.
Yes.
World War I,
yeah,
and World War II. World War I, it was a religious Europe. It was a patriotic Europe. People believed in God and country.
Yeah.
World War I shattered belief in God and country,
yeah,
because millions died, mm, seemingly for no reason. For God and country. Mm. The Germans for God and country, the English for God and country, mm, the French for God and country. That was the terror. World War I is the great horror of the 20th century. It gave us Nazism and communism, among other things. Then World War II, Christianity, or at least Christendom, sort of failed on the Holocaust issue.
Yeah.
The German churches overwhelmingly backed Hitler. I mean, I don't expect people to be heroes, but they weren't good at all, generally speaking. So then people concluded, okay, what we suspected was true from World War I is, mm, really true. It's useless. Mm. It's morally useless. How does that strike you?
It strikes me as true. And I think that several explanations can be true at the same time and just work,
exactly,
pull together.
Right.
So I think that once socially there is some leeway to express you're not Christian, that of course that allows people to go that way. And then when First World War came and there was this collective sense of loss of meaning, then it made more to go that way, mm-hmm, away from Christianity and the belief in a higher order and purpose. And then I believe your explanation that the church failed their true purpose is correct too. However, I will say that if you study the resistance movements, there were a lot of priests among those.
Oh, that's entirely, yeah, accurate. And I point that out all the time. That is correct. I'll just tell you, I asked two professors,
yeah,
who wrote a book on altruism.
Yeah.
And they both were Jews, mm, secular Jews, who from Europe. And they were saved by non-Jews. Their lives were saved during the Holocaust. I interviewed them, Sam and Pearl Olinger, O-L-I-N-E-R. People could look this up. And I said to them, you've studied rescuers of Jews in the Holocaust. You've studied altruism. So now I have a question. If you could go back, I think it was Poland. If you could go back to Poland, it's World War II, the Holocaust, and you as a Jew could knock on one door in the hope that they would hide you, would it be a non-Jewish lawyer, a non-Jewish doctor, a non-Jewish professor, or a priest? And both said the priest.
Yeah.
So I just want you to know that, mm, I know that. And, mm, the anti-religious will somewhat exaggerate the failure of Christianity.
Yeah.
Because they have an agenda.
Yeah.
So you just spoke so eloquently about the collapse of faith.
Yeah.
I suspect that if I had 10 30-year-old Danes in this room, they would not be quite as eloquent about the subject as you. And my point is not to compliment you. My point is to say, I don't think that the average European, young or middle-aged, is thinking about these issues.
They have a different, their explanation would be, today we all study at university, so now we know that people were just wrong in the olden times.
Exactly.
They believe that people just...
It was nonsense.
They believe in a steady progression throughout history where people just get smarter and smarter.
Perfect.
Yeah.
You're a find. She's a find. You said it in one sentence perfectly. That's right. That's what they believe. So no explanation is needed.
No,
because we have graduated.
They are a generation that believe they are the smartest generation that ever existed, even though they today we know they don't. They are not. They don't know.
This is
half
exactly
as my,
what American kids like, think. If you went to university in the last 50 years, that's what you think.
Yeah.
I am smarter than Moses, Jesus.
Yeah.
Aristotle.
Yeah.
Anyone.
Even though when they are done with elementary school, they know nothing. They can hardly spell and write today. They can't read a whole book in its entirety. And they can't focus for more than 10 minutes, so the teachers complain. And when they go to what is like our high schools, then they have to be taught how to read an entire
remedial
book. Yeah, exactly. And then when they go to university, they are at a much lower level and they can't do the basic math anymore. So they have to have extra math teachers. And
but they're still smarter than everyone.
Yes, they're still smarter.
That's right.
Yeah, because now they know about climate change and all that that the previous generation didn't. So, yeah.
I don't want to believe that God inflicted those two people with sickness, but I'm starting to think that He made them sick so we would meet. In light of your views, do you have close friends?
Believe it or not, I do have many close friends. Many
well,
friends.
I do believe it because you're so easy to be with and full of life. But I'll go further. Do you have close friends who share your views?
I would say my closest friends are my girlfriends at the same age as me, and no, they are on the left wing, but they are not very, they are open-minded, so like I am, so we don't really care. But I have many good friends that are conservative, I would say. Yeah.
So do you have any religious close friends, or is that almost impossible to find in your age group?
Yeah, I only have, no, I would say no. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So that is what I'm sort of up against. I think, if I had someone who went to church regularly and was close with me, then it would come easier.
And your intellectual equal, you don't even have to say yes, because, you may feel self-conscious, but that would help. Look, this is a terrible crisis. Europe, do you know, I'm curious if you know this, when the European Union adopted its charter a few years ago, like 5 years ago, I think it was, it mentioned Europe and the origins of Europe. It did not once mention Christianity. There would be no Europe without Christianity, but Christianity is not mentioned in the EU charter. Mm.
I remember you mentioned this in the interview I did with you the first time we met, and it struck me as a very good point. And you said that you have to be able to explain Christianity to people, and that Europe can't even explain why Europe is Europe.
Right.
It shows the tragedy of it all.
Just for the record, I will say to those of you watching or listening, my life, if I had to use one verb to explain my life, it is the word explain.
Mm.
I've explained Americans to Americans. I've explained Judaism to Jews and non-Jews. I've explained Christianity to Christians and to non-Christians. If you don't explain, you lose.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. And they stopped explaining.
Yeah.
Now, in Europe, they're not explaining Europe. Forget Christianity. They're not explaining Europe. And in America, they're not explaining America. And so we end up with nothing.
Mm.
So in America, we have real, real sick ideas. And they're most obvious where it comes to the trans issue. Men give birth. If a man says he is a woman, he can compete against women in women's sports. If a man says he is a woman, he can expose his genitals to girls in a shower at a YMCA, as was just done 2 weeks ago in San Diego, outside of San Diego, where a man is in the shower, completely naked, 17-year-old girl shows himself naked, and she says, "I don't want to see this." And they yell at her. You don't have that in Denmark yet, correct?
It is. I would say it's better in Denmark, definitely. So there are a few ways where I can see that good things are happening. For instance, we've become much more conservative when it comes to giving hormonal treatments to children who believe they are transgender. And so that is obviously good. And also the LGBT community is not quite
as radical.
Mm-hmm. And also I believe you have a separate issue with the teachers unions that are completely mm-hmm. engulfed by this trans ideology,
right?
And it's not as bad as in Denmark, mm-hmm. but there are, I will say it is still, there's reason to be concerned. Can I give an example?
Of course.
For instance, we have a phone line where kids can call if they have problems and they can't speak to anyone else. Then they can receive guidance, right? And it's called børnelinjen, børnetelefonen in Danish. Another O with the... and now if you go to their website, they have different issues, like different issues with bullying, issues with your parents, and then they have category issues with your body and gender. And then if you click that, you can see, for instance, it starts out with a video with a girl who liked to play soccer and liked to play with the kids. And then she discovered she was really a boy. So that is the example it shows of what it means to be trans. And then you can read, and there's a guide. Okay, if you feel you're born in the wrong body, you can ask for hormones. It guides you in that direction. And then at the end of that page, it has a questionnaire. And it asks the children, what is your gender identity? And it has all like 12 gender identities.
Oh.
And then 18% has answered trans. 18%.
Oh, well, that's American numbers.
Yeah. But it shows, it does shows that now the trans issues is just, it's just completely incorporated into the world of a child. Now, Danish children, they are presented this issue, like, what is your relationship with your body and gender from a very early age, I would say. So it's still a reason to be concerned.
We have a video up, interestingly, at PragerU from a Dane that Denmark is not really socialist.
Yeah.
Right. So I want to talk to you about that. So I'd like to give an example. I rented a car because, to me, liberty is not the Statue of Liberty. Liberty is the automobile.
Yeah. Yeah.
I identify cars with freedom. I rent a car everywhere I go in the world. And so my wife and I, we rented a car when we came to Denmark just a couple of months ago. And we were debating because we were told very few people drive around. They go by bicycle a great deal or by public transportation. And I said, well, maybe I don't need to rent a car. How's Uber? And they go, there is no Uber in Denmark. Can you explain that? Tell our viewers why there's no Uber.
Yeah. So in Denmark, the left-wing parties, they were very interested in protecting the taxi drivers' businesses. The taxi drivers, they keep their prices up by having basically too few licenses for the demand. And Uber was obviously a threat. So yeah, because the left-wing parties, they felt the need to protect the taxi drivers, then in the end they made Uber illegal. And what they said, it was because of safety reasons, that the safety standards weren't as high as in regular taxis.
Right.
Yeah. But obviously that does make sense.
So you even said to me, the wait is so long for a taxi.
Yeah. Yeah. So in I remember when I was in my 20s, I had no money. I would rather stand in the rain for an hour at 2 a.m. waiting for a bus than to take a taxi.
Because?
Because it was too expensive. It would be 500 crowns, which it was a lot, is a lot for me, to get home. So, and when we had Uber for like 6 months, I would always take an Uber. So I lived a much safer life as a young woman when Uber existed.
That's right. So I asked you what you think would happen if the Danish people voted on whether to have Uber or only taxis, and your answer.
They would, if it was this single issue, they would vote to have only Uber. But they still vote for the
left-wing parties that banned it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think you asked me why, and I think the explanation is what we call the welfare coalition, where too many people are dependent on the state. Where either they work for the government, we have a huge public sector, or they receive benefits every month. And so they vote for this stream of money to continue, and that is more important.
Well, that's why it's almost impossible to vote the left out of power when it's in power.
Yeah.
Because you're voting that you receive less from the government.
Exactly.
People and who, don't vote no to one, get less.
No one vote against their own self-interest.
I don't remember who said it, but I think it was said in the ancient world, not just the modern. The day people, I'm paraphrasing, the day people come to understand that they can elect people who will give them money, and is the end of democracy.
It's true, and I believe that is very very slowly the way it's going.
So, is there even a conservative party in this way, a party that says basically the way America was founded, small government? Is there a small government party in Denmark?
There is a party that comes close to it. It's called Liberal Alliance, but in Denmark, liberal is right wing.
Mm-hmm.
And it is.
By the way, I believe liberal is right wing here too.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, liberals don't.
Yeah.
And they think they're leftists.
I feel that is a very insightful point. Yeah. It's about explaining.
Yes.
But I would say it comes very close. They want a small-ish public sector, and they want the taxes to be not much more than 40%.
What is it now?
Now it's for me it's around 42%, and if you are there's a top tax that is around. I can't remember what it is.
I assume you're not among the wealthiest people in Denmark.
No, I'm among the lowest. Yeah, paid. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're paying 42%.
Yeah.
What do you get for your 42%? So let's see, free education.
Yeah.
Including free university.
Well, nothing is free, but
correct.
But
what do they claim?
Yeah,
I couldn't agree with you more.
A tax-funded healthcare system and a tax-funded education system, and also university. And of course, I studied almost 10 years all in all. So I have in that way really milked the cow. So I shouldn't play holy or anything. So I've had, I've taken my share.
How is the medical system?
It's all right. It's under pressure, as in it is in England.
Well, in England, it's beyond under pressure. It's failing.
Okay, maybe it's and I shouldn't Canada compare them. Yeah, but we have the same problem, basically, that we don't have enough nurses, and they only want to work part-time, and they also would rather work in Norway, where the wages are higher. So we have a big debate about the size of the nurses' salary.
If you want private medical care, can you pay for it? Or it's basically everything is public.
You can. You definitely can.
So the rich do that?
Yes. And also we have a very good system where if there's a too long wait, you will be referred to a private hospital. It has been one of the greatest successes that a right-wing government has made.
Private hospitals.
Yeah. I know. And also
Well, Americans will learn this too late, unfortunately.
Yeah.
If you need it, you know what an MRI is?
Yeah, it's a scan.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if you need one, how long will you have to wait?
I think it depends on the reason. If there's a cancer, if there's a reason to believe it's cancer, then you get quite quickly a treatment. But that's because in the 90s, Denmark was almost a developing country when it came to treating cancer. And then a lot of governments, they made these cancer packages. So now if there's a reason to believe you have cancer, you get a much better treatment. So we are doing well there. But still, there's reason to the private hospitals would be to prefer for many, many patients, and many patients wait months with very, very painful
it's what I assume.
Problems. Yeah.
So we'll draw to a conclusion by talking about you again, because you're fascinating. And would you like to be married?
Yes.
If I would have asked you at 25, would you have said yes?
Yes.
20?
Yes.
So you've been 10 years unmarried, but have wanted to be married the whole time.
I don't know if I would probably say I will eventually. But at 25, I would have said
okay,
yes.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
So you have everything going for you. Mm. I know I'm embarrassing you, but what is the issue?
Well, I have been married. I was married at 26 because I really wanted to. And I think because I ended up almost talking him into it before he was really ready. So sometimes I can be too...
That's right. I talked my wife into it.
Yeah. And sometimes I can be too persuasive. And it didn't work out. And that is that's a long story. But I have been married.
Well, you weren't married long.
No, I was married a little over a year. Yeah. And now I feel I would still, if I'm so lucky to meet someone that I really fit well with, I would like to be married again. Because I still believe in the institution. I believe in marriage because...
What percentage of your generation believes in the institution?
I have no idea. I feel that marriage still holds value because people admire when people do something that is difficult. And to stay together in this modern world is difficult. And I think because we have a society that admires romantic love, they still admire marriage in that view.
Interesting.
That is a statement to believe in love, right?
So I ask women that I meet, a waitress in a restaurant, someone standing in line, going on the airplane, if I'm sitting next to a young woman on the airplane, and I'm obviously very open, so I say, may I ask you a question? Yeah. I mean, I don't begin with it, but if we're talking, it's of course, you know, they always say, of course. I say, so I'm going to ask you this question. You can have one of two guarantees. You can be guaranteed a great career or guaranteed a great marriage. It doesn't mean you cannot have the other one. It only means only one is guaranteed. Which guarantee would you choose? I've asked many, many women under 30 this question, and it's 50-50.
Okay.
What do you think the women of your age would answer?
I would say probably a great career, because they believe that they can have the same quality of life through friendships. You asked me this as well, and I, without thinking about it, I said a great marriage. And so I guess that's just my instinct.
Well, I had a feeling it was your instinct, but it's also partially what makes you a conservative. That's the conservative answer.
Yeah. It's the belief that some
it's
ways of living.
It's also a rational answer because it's a greater challenge. I mean, and it's also much greater joy in life. I mean, how much career is wonderful, but you know, when you come home, you don't hug your career.
No, exactly.
You don't have a conversation with your career.
Yeah.
You don't have dinner with your career.
Yeah.
You don't make children with your career. It's not even rational, let alone conservative.
No.
So how do you meet men in Denmark? I mean, at a bar? Do you have social media sites like we have for singles?
So for me, I have been on dating apps at time, but I'm a very social person. I meet many new people all the time, and I believe that for me, it's better to meet someone via like my social circles, because then we have a lot of things in common, naturally. And I am just one of those people who tends to go out at new places and meet new people. So for me, that's how I meet people.
And what does a new place mean? A bar?
No, not. It's rarely that I meet anyone at a bar, I would say. Well, I've talked to many people, but not very interesting people a lot of the times. So I go to lectures, I go to political debates, I go to like private parties. And it can also be almost, also I'm a journalist, and being a journalist means that you meet many people. And I'm not saying it's my interview subjects, but it just means I am, as a living, I am social and meet many people. And sometimes I believe very much in a meeting that's you meet someone through a friend. Yeah, something like that.
So we met 2 months ago. You didn't know who I was until we met, obviously. And now you're in my house in California.
Yeah.
So in your mind, are you thinking, you know, Astrid, this is what happens in your life? Is that part of what you're thinking? That it's surprising, but not shocking?
I will say, because I'm very open to new people and new experiences.
Right, that's what I would think.
Yeah,
yes.
And I would always say yes to an invitation, for instance, like the one you gave me. And I would also, even though I'm Danish and we are much more closed off, I'm also the type of person to make invitations to all strangers. Like I'm very, I will take people
but
in.
You're not a closed off Dane.
No, I'm not as extremely open as some Americans, but I am, as a for Dane, very open. Yeah.
I don't find you closed at all. If an American is more open than you, it's not a real openness. You are fully open, in my opinion.
Yeah, I am because, yeah, I want to. I think that's my basic want, is that I want to connect with people. So I just, my strategy is just to offer me myself, and this is me, and then I hope people will like it. Yeah.
Well, this is the beginning of your trip. I would love to know what you had noticed in America that's different from Denmark, but it's too early. One thing we did notice, you have no drive-through Starbucks.
Yeah, that's another thing. In Denmark, Starbucks is pricier. Like it's much
Everything
more of a yeah, it's much more of a luxury. So and we don't drive quite as much. So Starbucks is something that you find on pedestrian streets, and it's very expensive. Yeah.
So would you like to say a final thing?
I would say one final thing. I would say another difference, and I mentioned this to you late last night, that to have a show where young people call in and ask someone older for advice, I don't think you would have that in Denmark. Because in Denmark, young people automatically believe they are smarter than the older generation. It wouldn't exist. In Denmark, it would be a program with young people teaching the older generations how what they should believe
That's
about the world.
That is fascinating. That's a very interesting insight. Then they'll learn nothing. That's the irony.
Yeah. Yeah, because of course, if we all we stand on the shoulders of previous generations.
Of course. And that's why you're conservative. Yeah. You want to conserve the best of the past.
Yeah, exactly. But now we have a generation that starts everything over. So, yeah. So the wisdom is lost, I would say.
That's the characteristic of the left. We'll rebuild. What is it? What is the term in English? To rebuild what is already built. What is it? We're going to rebuild the wheel. That's it. Yeah, we're going to re-engineer the wheel or something like that. Yeah.
Reinvent.
Yeah, reinvent the wheel. Yeah. That's right. That's the term.
Yeah.
That's what they do.
That is what they, if they are lucky, they'll end up doing.
Excellent point. Well, we are going to stay in touch.
Yes.
Obviously.
Yes.
Astrid, huh?
Who?
I'm close. I'm getting there. H-O-G. Drop us a line at PragerU if you'd like to communicate with her. This has been very, very special.
I think so, too.
Good. Thank you. See you next week.